We're having our class on the Jewish home, and our topic today is going to be seesaws. We all know that it's fun to sit on a seesaw. Sit down, someone sits on the other side, you go up, they go down, you go down, they go up, and things keep fluctuating, and that's the fun of a seesaw. But then there are things in life, seesaw. No, when you go to a park, you have a long bench. You have a long bench that kids sit on, right? So on a seesaw, it's fun to go up and down. In one's health, it's not fun to go up and down. In one's finances, it's not fun to go up and down. There are things in life, many things in life, we want should be consistent, right? But at the end of the day, there are things in life that as much as we want them to be consistent, they won't be. Much of life involves fluctuation. And the more prepared we are for it, the less it knocks us off our feet. There are people who, the slightest thing goes wrong in their life, and they lose control over it. I can't believe it. The bus is running late. This is terrible. You stand at the bus stop, you hear people, and it's terrible. I'm going to be late to my dentist. This is terrible. Maybe your dentist is running late. That's also terrible. So there are people that the slightest thing throws them off whack. In life, we should be prepared. On the one end, we should try to keep things in order. That's why the Rambam writes, the proper order of things is, make sure you have a source of parnasah, a source of a livelihood. Make sure you have a house to live in. Make sure you've established things in a logical way and then get married. Don't get married and then look for a way to fund all your expenses. People buy a house when they can't afford it. People buy a car when they can't afford it. Or they could just barely afford it. No. Build your finances in a way that you'll be able to cover your expenses. So being prepared is a major factor, and the more prepared we are for what's to come, the more we can handle it without being totally knocked off our feet by it. So if a person is aware that part of raising children is that they will need stitches, so then when their child needs stitches, they don't go out of their mind. I remember taking my kids for stitches and holding them, and the doctor goes, "You're going to be able to hold the kid as I do the stitches?" And I go, "Yeah." And then the doctor says, you're sure you're not going to run out of the room? I say, no. And he says, you sure you don't want the nurse to hold the baby? And I said, no. If the nurse holds the child, it's harder for the child. If I'm holding the child, at least they have me there. And I'm standing there telling the child a story as they're getting stitches. Okay. It was very hard for me to go with my daughter to get her to the dentist. I don't know why. That was very hard to see the kid jump and flinch and cry. And it was harder than doing the stitches. But okay, whatever. But if we're prepared and we realize it's a part of life, going to the dentist and kids breaking their hands, and sometimes a kid needs a cast, and sometimes a kid needs stitches. Okay, it's not fun. And sometimes a kid has fever. That's all normal. Well, the same is true for marriage. There are things that are normal. We have to be prepared for them. People enter marriage and they think that if it's right, then every so often we'll have this little spat. But most of the time it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. And people don't realize that marriage is much better than you think it's going to be. And it's much harder than you can imagine it's going to be. It's both. And part of marriage is that there are downs. It's like a seesaw. And part of the downs is that they last much longer than you'd like them to. To the point where a person sometimes wonders, how am I ever going to get out of this? Am I ever going to get out of this? Part of marriage is that there are downs. And downs can last an hour. And downs can last a day. And downs can last a week. And downs can last a month. And downs can last a year. And downs can last years. And they are still not a reason to get divorced. And they do not mean that the marriage is doomed. There are periods in our life. There are times of hardship. There are times of pressure. There are times that a person has a bus that drives them up the wall. There are times that a person has a kid that drives them crazy. Sometimes it's a kid that won't sleep at night. Sometimes it's a kid that's a nag. Sometimes it's a kid that won't take a bottle or is always pulling at his mother and confusing her. Sometimes it's a kid that always has criticism. Sometimes it's a kid that has an attitude. Sometimes it's a kid that decides they don't want to go the path of the parents. There can be all kinds of stresses that come up in life that really affect the way we function. Sometimes it's a medication that a person takes. We have to be prepared that in life we're working together even when we have downs. People enter marriage and they're not prepared for the downs. Oh, I can handle a few minutes that we're not on the best of terms, but all in all, things should be a bed of roses. Well, a bed of roses has a lot of thorns. Yeah. And in marriage, it requires building. If marriage has the potential to be the best thing in the world, the very best thing, and I'll prove it to you, because the Torah, when it wants to describe the very best thing, such as the Torah itself, our relationship with Hashem, the Torah takes the allegory of a man and his wife. That means when Hashem wanted to describe something very, very, very good, the best that there is, He took the relationship between a man and a woman. He wanted to describe the greatest relationship. He took the relationship between a husband and wife. That means it has the potential for being the best thing in the world. Well, that means it's going to be the hardest thing in the world, too. Good things don't come easy. Well, what's so hard about marriage? I'll tell you. What's hard is that you're marrying someone who's not perfect. Yeah, I know. We're all great. But we have to marry these wives. What are you going to do? And at the end of the day, we have to make a marriage work with them. So if you could be married to yourself, then that would be great, right? Because we're all perfect. But we have to marry someone who's not as perfect as we are. And so then it becomes very difficult. Now, for some reason, they don't find us to be as perfect as we know we are. That's another big challenge. Not only are they imperfect, but they think that we're imperfect. You know, it's pretty tough. So they might actually be right. You know, they might have a point. Could be that we are imperfect. And then we have to make it work. And there's supposed to be shalom bayit, right? Peace in the house. It's interesting that shalom does not mean peace. Shalom means whole, right? In English, when you want to say peace, well, peace is not whole. It's a piece of. And in Hebrew, when you want to say peace, you say whole. You say shalom. Shalom means shalem. Shalom means a wholeness. So there's supposed to be shalom in the house. Well, how is there going to be a wholeness? You're not going to marry someone perfect. I'm sorry, I know you're going to try, and I know you're going to tell her she's perfect, but in all honesty, she's not. And in all honesty, we aren't either, right? So how could there be shalom? Well, sometimes the shleimut, our wholeness, is when we can deal with someone who is not shalem. Guys, think about that for a minute. You become a greater person that way. What happens in marriage? What is the greatest difficulty in marriage? The greatest difficulty is that the man sees what's missing in the woman. And then he is so nice, he tries to help her see it too. And for some reason, she doesn't change. But you know what? The woman sees what's missing in the man. And she is so nice. She tries to share it with him. She says, you know, honey, if you'd get up on time, you might not be fired from every job you have. You know, honey, you've been fired 7 times ever since we got engaged. What's going to be after we're married? So what does the guy say? You don't know what type of bosses these are. You don't know what's going on these days in the job market. And she goes, but they each told you the reason was because you showed up 2 hours late on the second day of the job. And he goes, that's an excuse. They're covering up. You don't understand. Wait a second. You're going to be married to someone who isn't perfect, believe it or not. You're going to be married to someone, and now you have to Be whole with them. Be shalem with them. Have shalom with them. Wait, how could I be whole with a person that's so imperfect? You don't understand. Pause. True story. Knock on the door. We'll make up a name. We'll call the guy Menachem. Okay? Hi, Menachem. Hi, Rabbi. Menachem, you are married all of 3 months now, right? Yes, Rabbi. And you have discovered that you are married to the wicked witch of the West. And she is so terrible. You've seen bad people in your life. But she takes the cake. And Menachem looks at me and says, if you knew, then why didn't you tell me before I married her? Ah. But the problem is that this is the story of Menachem and Shmerel and Yankel and Beryl and Chaim and Avigdor and every guy that gets married. What happens after you get married? It might not happen in 3 months, might happen in 6 months, might not happen in 6 months, might happen in a year. One day you wake up and you suddenly realize the person you're married to is flawed. Really flawed. You see, everyone else is married to normal people who are less than perfect. But you married a lemon. No, really. And everyone is convinced that their lemon is far more sour than anyone else's. You have no idea, Rabbi. There's normal, and then there's not so great, and then there's my wife. No, everyone feels like their spouse takes the cake. But why? Because you only know the flaws of your spouse. You don't know your neighbor's wife's flaws. You have no clue. You really have no clue. Right? So I'm standing in line, and the guy behind me goes, could you watch my cart for a second? I go, yeah. And he runs to the ice cream counter, and he comes back with this huge pile of chocolate ice creams. It's like an hour before Shabbos. And he goes, I forgot to get ice cream for my wife. I said, now he has the most expensive ice creams. And not one, and not two, like four. Okay. And he goes, you know, there's ice cream, and then there's ice cream for the wife. It's two different things. Ice cream for the wife, you got to get something good. I'm going like, yeah, right. I agree, right? And I'm looking into my cart. I don't have ice cream for the wife. I certainly don't have the best ice cream in the supermarket. And I don't have four tubs of it. Okay. So his wife needs four tubs of the best ice cream going into Shabbos. Okay. But you can walk around and say, wait, that's 2 hours worth of work just funding those ice creams. The guy works cleaning buildings all Friday afternoon. It's going to, what he's carrying, those four tubs, right? Four tubs times 25 shekel, 100 shekel. He had to work 3 hours washing people's stairwells and a little bit more than that to cover those four tubs of ice cream. So you could walk around and say, what kind of wife did I marry? I have to work 3 hours just to fund their ice cream. That's not fair. But every person can say that's not fair. And every person is convinced that in their scenario, it's much worse. So we walk into marriage and we suddenly discover our spouse has flaws. And our spouse discovers we have flaws. And that's reality, and there's nothing wrong with it. And then, why do things get difficult? Because we're not willing to accept them. We think that shalem means, I will help you be shalem. I will help you be more whole. And then we will have a whole marriage. And she thinks she will help me be more whole. And again, every spouse has valid claims. Don't kid yourself. Every husband and every wife has valid, legitimate claims and has valid, legitimate requests of their spouse and has a valid reason to say, my spouse is absolutely nuts. Believe it or not, I know it's not nice to say about ourselves, but it's true. You see, with everyone else in this room, you have a relationship that's like this far. We're friends, but we're going to end the night. I'm going to go to my bed, you're going to go to your bed, and goodbye, and you don't have to know if I snore. It's none of your business, right? But when it's your spouse that snores, and a million other things, then it is your business. If you floss, and at the end of the night you put your floss next to the bed, I don't have to deal with it, unless I'm on the bunk above you and I step on it every morning, then maybe I deal with it. But usually I don't have to deal with it. But if it's your wife, then she does have to deal with it. And suddenly, all of our flaws come full head. But that doesn't make it legitimate to say this is a terrible marriage. And then, when things go sour, that doesn't mean it's a bad marriage. A good marriage will have bad times. The perfect marriage will have bad times. Good. He's paying. What we're trying to accomplish tonight is to be prepared for it. It shouldn't knock us off our feet. What happens when things go south in a marriage is that people think it's all over. How am I ever getting out of this? How do I ever build from this? Now, everything I was scared of just came true. And now, how do I build from here on in? No. In every marriage this happens, and in every marriage there's this wonderful surprise. And part of building is not letting those difficult times destroy the marriage. And you have to remember that every time you cross, you accomplish, you make peace after you've had a difficult time, your marriage walks away stronger. Much stronger. You're a different person. Your marriage is a different marriage. And if you remember that every marriage has really big difficulties, then you start being prepared to build a real marriage together. We have to break that facade of the perfect marriage, where every time I walk in the house, my wife will be all smiles and say, "It's so nice you came home, I was waiting for you, and your favorite dinner is hot on the stove, and if you're not exactly hungry right now, don't worry, I'll eat it, and I'll be perfectly happy that I slaved for 2 hours working and making it for you, and you don't want to eat it, and tomorrow I will make it all over again, even though you didn't eat it tonight. That's perfectly fine. Is there something else I can get for you? How about a hot cup of tea?" Right? So we have this imagined home, and then we have reality. And reality is great. Reality really is great. But it requires a lot of building. And it doesn't happen on autopilot. And if you are fortunate enough to have grown up in a home where your parents had a good marriage, then you only met their marriage after they were married for about 15 years. Because until you're about 13, 14, 15, you don't understand anything about your parents' marriage. It's only when you hit about 18, 20, 22, maybe 30, that you start understanding what your parents' marriage really is. So you look at them and you think you understand what you see. If you saw a good marriage, it wasn't that way when they got married. And even if they tell you differently, a lot of parents have this thing where they tell their kids, "We were always lovey-dovey, things were always great, love at first sight, and things were always great between us." I'm sorry, it's just not true. If they have a real marriage involves real hardship, and you build through hardship. But you have to be prepared for hardship. So that's what we're here. So tonight we discussed seesaws. In life, there are ups and downs, and that's normal. In marriage, there are ups and downs, and that's normal. Downs can last a long time. The major difficulties we encounter are when we see reality and the weakness of our spouse. We have to realize that shalem, wholeness in a marriage, is learning to work with the faults of my spouse, not learning to change them, but learning to adapt and work with them. I don't have to change them. I know of a couple where the husband is always late. When I say late, that means if they make up with their ride to pick them up at 10, then at 10 he goes into the shower. Oy. Okay? So for the first 2 years of their marriage, the wife was super frustrated and always yelling at him, "It's not fair, they're waiting for us, they're honking," all kinds of things. Eventually she learned that when they have a ride at 10, she tells him, "Our ride's at 9:30. What? Thank you. I'll get it. Toda. Okay, so she tells him our ride's at 9:30. She doesn't tell him it's at 10. And he at 9:30 says, "Oh my gosh, they're going to be here in a second. I'm running into the shower." She doesn't say anything. She says, "Okay, good for you, Yishkach. I'll try to get everything ready." And then he runs out and he's ready and it's 9:45, 9:50. And he goes, "Wow, it's amazing. They're not here yet. Oh, maybe I'll just do one more thing." And she's like, "Are you sure you want to do one more thing?" You know, and then at 10 o'clock, they're all ready. And after a few times, he caught on and he realized, smart lady, she learned to work with my weakness. We don't have to change. We don't have to change the other person. We're not going to succeed most of the time changing the other person. We have to learn what their weakness is, learn to work with it. And here we apply what we learned in our last class, honey. Working with honey.